Life and Transition, Episode 3, Identity Crisis, Reclaiming Worthiness and Belonging as a Birthright.
What defines your worth? How do you measure your value as a human being? What gives you a sense of belonging? Sometimes culture, society, and even our families tell us that we need to be a certain way to be worthy of love. That our value is determined by how much money we make or how many achievements we earn. That we only belong if we do X, Y, and Z and do them perfectly. I want you to know that none of that is true. You are worthy and valuable just as you are. It took me a long time to learn that and to believe that. In fact, I'm still learning this. But I want to share part of my story with you in this episode. I'm warning you, it's vulnerable. It brings up a lot of emotion for me. And I'm telling it because I hope it helps you find a sense of worthiness and belonging that's not wrapped up in your performance, but rather rests in the knowledge that you are loved and belong just as you are. I'm Art Blanchford, and this is Life in Transition, a podcast about making the most of the changes we're given. As a married father of three teenagers, a longtime global business executive and adventurer, I've been through hundreds of transitions in my life. Many have been difficult, but all have led to a depth and richness I could never have imagined. You'll get to hear all about them on this podcast so that together we can create more love and joy in our lives, no matter what transitions we are going through. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Life in Transition. I'm Art Blanchford, and today we're going to talk about one of the most important transitions you could ever make, reclaiming worthiness and belonging as your birthright. If your sense of self is completely dependent on how your work is going or what others think about you, I understand. I've been there, especially after years of putting my heart and soul into my work achievements. My hope, though, is that by hearing my story, you will look at your life differently. You'll stop thinking that you are what you do or what others think of you and start believing that you're a worthy child of God. But first, I'm going to tell you my story. I was raised in a commune in Pennsylvania. I was one of six kids and two cousins, my two parents and two aunts. Our household was a total of 12. Life was hard. Money was scarce. We were very, very poor. I learned early on, though, that if I worked hard, I could get money to buy things. When I worked well, I also gained the respect of local farmers and businessmen, as well as my parents, siblings, and peers. And when I worked hard in school, I gained the attention and therefore, I thought, the love of the teachers. So I took that message to heart. I learned to think, I am my work, my grades, and my performance. As I grew older, it turned into I am what I earn and achieve. That's how I lived for the first 40 years of my life. Everything always went back to hard work. In college, when a girl wanted to date me, I believed that it was because I was a good engineering student and that she knew I would be able to provide well for her and our family. I'd listened to my professors and earned high marks in their classes, so that I could earn their respect, admiration, and rapport. Then I made more good grades and in turn got more attention. I took on leadership positions at the university and earned more prominence. All of this reinforced the paradigm that performance equals love, acceptance, and belonging. I am my work. I am my performance. I am what I earn. After college, I used my good grades and recommendations from professors and co-op bosses to land a good job. When I got married, I told myself that I had earned my wife's love over years of being a good friend to her, and also because I had a good job and she knew I would be able to support us well and take care of her. Over the next several years, I poured myself into my work and marriage, doing all the right things to earn love and respect from my bosses, customers, colleagues, and my wife. It all seemed to be working perfectly on the surface. I kept getting promoted and took on even more responsibility. But always there was this fear in the back of my mind. This nagging thought that I wasn't enough. What would my future look like if I screwed up? What if I got fired? Or what if I got divorced? This fear became so intense that sometimes I started seeing black and yellow in my left eye. I had tough headaches a lot of the time. Then one Friday evening at the ripe old age of 25, I felt chest pains and a strange sensation radiating down my left arm. I told my wife and she freaked out. "We're going to the hospital right now," she shrieked, and wouldn't take no for an answer. As she was driving 90 miles an hour to the hospital, she told me how she'd lost a friend in his 20s to a heart attack. "And I'm not taking any chances with you," she said. We spent the night in Mount Clemens General Hospital, but the doctors found nothing wrong. Afterward, I did a lot of reevaluation counseling and decided that it may be best if I quit my job and move back to Tennessee where I could be near family. I could start my own business and try being my own boss for a while. But I stressed over the decision for months, fully expecting that as soon as I mentioned it to my boss, I would be fired at once for being disloyal. Finally, I broke the news to them in November, and I wanted to leave at Christmas. Much to my surprise, they begged me to stay. After going back and forth for a while, they finally agreed I could move to Tennessee in March and start working from there on one condition, that I would have to find three people to fill the jobs that I was doing. "What?" I replied. "Three people to do my one job?" It seems I'd been doing three jobs and just didn't know it. So I put those three people in place by the end of March. My company gave me a promotion and new jobs so that I could work from home in Tennessee. This new role meant that I had to travel almost all the time. But I told myself, I am my work. I am how I perform. This is a promotion, so it's good. Soon I will find peace, acceptance, freedom, and belonging. 2 years later, still not feeling that sense of self-worth or belonging, I took the next promotion that moved me and my wife to Germany. That was a great transition. We'll have an episode on that at some point. Living in this new country, I did very well. It was very stressful, but I kept saying to my wife, "Soon we'll go back to Tennessee and settle down to raise our family." We adopted our first son while we lived in Germany. A few years in, though, I got another promotion offer in Michigan, one that I couldn't refuse. It was a corporate global VP role working for the CEO. So, of course, I took the job since I was my work, and accepting it felt like I was saying, "I am good, I'm accepted, and I belong." At 31 years old, I was running a global business of more than $400 million, and my stress levels went through the roof. Through Tony Robbins and some other trainings, I learned to handle the stress better. But still, there was a lot going on. We were building a house in Michigan, had two kids, were in the process of adopting a third. Things looked good from the outside, but internally, I worried constantly about what people thought. I was giving people way too much power over my life. Everything I did was about earning belonging, respect, and love, though I didn't know it then. I even got my executive MBA during this time, just to give myself a little bit more insurance that I'd be able to maintain my income if I got fired or had to change jobs. Finally, after years of wanting to move back to Tennessee, I quit my job, took the advice of a potential business partner, and jumped in. We packed up our home and headed back to Nashville area. Just like I'd planned all those years before, I started my own business. I had a solid business plan and a couple of companies that wanted to invest with me. I felt like I was on top of the world. But then it all came crashing down. When I didn't get a big contract that I had been promised from an automotive OEM, things went sideways. I already had a couple of employees and a plant with production equipment that I had paid for with my own money, and I was working really hard. But sales weren't coming in as fast as I was having to spend the money on the business. So after using my money, I took on some investors. But even with that, I wasn't able to get the revenue and earnings up to where they needed to be. And finally, on a fateful day in the fall of 2010, I reached the end of my rope. I'm lying on the floor of my office in my home, pounding with my fists and cussing myself. How could you be such an idiot? Why did you ever quit your great job? Now you've burned all of your retirement money in this business. What the hell were you thinking? How are you going to feed your family? Your three young kids and your wife. What kind of idiot are you? How could you possibly do this? You are such an idiot. You are such a bleeping idiot. I said this to myself over and over as I cried, screamed, and pounded the floor, tears running down my face. I felt completely useless. If I couldn't perform and provide for the most important people in my life, my wife and kids, then what good am I? I am nobody. I am nothing. I felt like I had no sense of self or standing outside of what I earned, how I performed, or what people thought of me. And in that moment, I felt like my life was over. I was sure that nobody could love or respect somebody like me. I was nothing and no good to anybody. It was a real identity crisis. For all this time, I had believed that I was my work and only as valuable as my performance or what I could provide. So who was I when my business was failing? Who was I without being able to earn good money or do meaningful work? Without being able to provide for my family? Thank God, my wife came in at that moment. I want to cry thinking about it even now. She knelt beside me and put her hand on my back. I was still on the floor, crying and blubbering. But she said, "Honey, forget it. Forget about it. Just come with me. Just come with me now." This was around 9 o'clock on a Tuesday or Thursday morning, and the kids were at school. She said in a loving and cheerful voice, "I've got a good day planned for us." I replied, "But I have to work. I have to. I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills. I don't have the money to get groceries. I don't know how we're going to..." She cut me off. She was an angel. She was so gracious. She said, "It's okay. We'll get through this together. I love you for who you are." When I heard those words, it felt like an arrow shot in and reverberated through my consciousness, my head, and right into my heart. She loves me for who I am, not for what I do or can provide. At that time, I was the one making the money while she was raising the kids. But since I wasn't making any money, I thought she'd be freaked out more than anybody and probably even want to leave me. After all, she's the planner and the practical one in our relationship. She counted on me to provide, and I had let her down. The economic security and stability was gone, and yet she loves me anyway? I felt stunned. Was I hearing this correctly? That was a hot Tennessee fall day in October. But she already had made us popcorn and hot chocolate, and she said, "We're going to watch a movie." I went with her to the living room, where she turned on It's a Wonderful Life. I've always loved that movie, and she knew it. I loved it even more at that moment. After watching it there together, she said, "See, you have everything that matters. You have your kids, you've got me, and you've got your health. And that's all that matters. We have each other." Hearing those words changed everything. That moment of identity crisis took me on a journey of transformation. I went from thinking I am my work, my money, and my performance, to believing I am worthy just for being a child of God, just for being a human being. Or as Brené Brown says, worthiness and belonging are my birthright, and I don't have to earn them. It's not defined by how much I earn or what I achieve. But let me tell you, friends, this is very much a work in progress. That identity crisis was in 2010, almost 11 years ago, and I still wrestle with it here today. Early last year, when I recognized my workaholism and joined a recovery program, I noticed that on Saturdays and Sundays, the days I usually didn't go to work, so I could spend time with my family, were uncomfortable times for me. I'd sit there with my family, and if things didn't flow well between me and them, I'd end up back at my desk working. I'd chastise myself saying, "I've got to stop and go spend time with the family." But the truth is, I often just felt useless there. With work, at least I know what I'm doing, and I can get recognition for that. And I know I'm good at it. But as a father and a husband, sometimes it's great, and sometimes I felt like I don't know what I'm doing. And I feel like I'm no good at it, like I'm useless as a father and husband. I'm getting better in both of those roles, but I still wrestle with those feelings. In the past, I used to make myself so busy, I didn't have to feel those feelings. But now, I've learned to just sit with them. Once I notice those feelings, instead of hiding them under busyness or going back to work, I just go and sit with my daughter, my son, or my wife. I don't have to do anything. I'm just there. I call it dropping into their space. And sometimes we'll sit together for hours, literally hours, with no agenda. Now, I love that time. I love it. As I'm building better boundaries with work, I now have time for these moments or hours. They almost always turn into great connections. My daughter might tell me about what's going on at school or about a new boyfriend, or bae, as she calls it. Or my son might talk to me about the latest computer gadget or car that he likes. My daughter might tell me about her dreams to go live in Ireland, and we'll spend hours looking at pictures about that on the internet. Things I would never know if I didn't make the time to drop in. But much more importantly, I wouldn't have the deep, rich, loving connection that has resulted from these times together. And it has nothing to do with how much I'm making or what position I have at work, but it has everything to do with being present, feeling that I'm enough, and having enough time, space, and energy to share it with them. It's a big transition, but I'm getting there, and I love the way it feels. Maybe you're listening right now, and you've connected with my story. You also want to go from thinking, "I am my work," to knowing that you're worthy of belonging and love without performance. Well, I'd love to share a couple of things that have helped me. First, change the story you're telling yourself with affirmations. When I had the crisis back in 2010, I did a lot of affirmations I'd learned from Tony Robbins. I'd say things like, "I am worthy, I am worthy, I am worthy," aloud as I run. "I am worthy just as I am. I have all the love I need." Sometimes those felt a little bit forced, but they did seem to help. I started to believe it. The second helpful tool was something my wife recommended from Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now. It's a series of questions you can use to check in with yourself. And they go something like this. What am I feeling right now in this moment? Am I at ease? If the answer is no, because you're feeling anxious or scared, the next question is, okay, what am I feeling? And then who is feeling that? Or what part of me is feeling that? And what does that want to say? By observing the answers to these questions and being mindful of those feelings, you may find they'll slowly diminish. Sometimes I'd go through those questions and then ask myself again, am I at ease now? And if not, then what am I feeling right now in this moment? And you can go through them again. It really helps me to slow down and notice what's happening. And just the noticing makes me realize that I am not my anxiety or anger, but I'm just feeling that. Just observing diminishes those adverse feelings greatly. Speaking of noticing, the third practice I've adopted is mindfulness. It's a meditation centered on being present, and that's made a huge difference as well. I've been practicing consistently for several years now, and in the practice, I focus on my breath as I take deep, slow inhales and slow, complete exhales. Then I'll scan my body and notice what I'm physically feeling from head to toe. What are the sensations? This can be done in just a few minutes. I usually use about 10 minutes. And it always brings me back to the present and diminishes anxiety. Fourth is slowing down. Slowing down has meant creating space in my schedule, space for relationships, space for reflection, and space to just chill. I love laying in my backyard on my big fuzzy sleeping bag reading Reader's Digest. I used to do that when I was a kid on Sundays, or also when I was in college. Sometimes I take the whole Sunday to read a Reader's Digest. I haven't made time for it in the last 3 or 4 decades. But now that I've slowed down, I realize I still love to do that. Creating more space in my life has led to a lot of growth, which makes sense. If you want to plant a beautiful garden, the first thing you need to do is prepare a space for it. You have to tear up the sod first, or else nothing's going to grow. If you put seeds down on the sod, it simply doesn't work. Just like adding a good thing on top of an already full schedule doesn't work. You must remove the sod. You must remove that thing from your schedule to create space for something new to grow. Too much of a good thing is still too much. Creating space and slowing down has helped me see life differently. I'm able to pour into important relationships with my family, friends, siblings, and parents, which has helped me see that I have value beyond my performance, money, and position. I'm beginning to see myself as a child of God and as someone who's worthy of love and belonging just for being who I am. The fifth practice that's helped me make this transition is learning to let go, or, as I like to say, let go and let God. To me, this means letting go and trusting God, trusting life, and trust in the universe that I'll be okay. I don't have to have everything under control. I'm just fooling myself if I think I can control it anyway. I can let go of depending on the good opinion of others. I don't have to give away so much power to my boss, customers, or even my wife. I'm still working on that, but I've made great progress. I just keep reminding myself that I don't work or exist for my boss, company, or anyone else. I work and exist for God and for life. God, not my company, is my employer, my boss. This opens up so many more options for me. All of these practices together, affirmations, Tolle's check-in, mindfulness, slowing down, and letting go, they're helping me make a huge shift. I no longer feel like I need to perform in order to be okay. And I'm really proud of the progress I've made over the last few years, especially the last year. My life is so much better for it, so much better. My energy, health, and joy is much better. And I just feel this sense of freedom and peace that I never felt before. and I hope that some of the things can help you too. Now, before we wrap up, I want to ask you some questions to help you reflect on what we've talked about today. Was there a piece of my story that resonated with you today, that really spoke to you? What do you sense you need to do for yourself after listening to this episode? Is it adding affirmations? Or the daily emotional check-in routine? Practicing mindfulness or carving out more time in your schedule to slow down? What can you start working on today to make a difference in your life today? Take a minute and write it down. Record it in your phone, email or text it to yourself, or write it on a piece of paper. I'll pause now so you can write that down. What is the one action that will make the most difference for you? And when are you going to start to do it? Thank you for listening to this very personal story. I look forward to your feedback, and I really hope that you find this useful so you can transition to having a more positive identity, more freedom, more joy. Know that you are not your work. You are not the opinion of others. You are not your performance, and you do not have to earn grace. Know that you're a worthy child of God, and that worthiness and belonging is a birthright for all of us. Yes, that includes you, no matter what mistakes you may have made. Connect with me on LinkedIn or on our website, lifeintransition.online, and let me know if anything stood out to you from this episode. Let a close friend know too. It could be a huge encouragement to them. And let us both know how you're applying it. Thanks so much for joining me today. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and it would mean a lot to me if you'd share this episode with a friend. I'm Art Blanchford, and I'll see you next time on Life in Transition. Life in Transition is co-written and produced by Laura Boach. If you want to learn more about me and what I'm doing when I'm not podcasting, please visit me at artblanchford.com. Life in Transition is a production of
Great Feeling Studios. Oh.